So Brad Hayes, talk to us a little bit about the GOP tax overhaul plan and what its prospects are.
Yeah, that's a good question, what the prospects are. I mean, one of the things that you hear time and time again is that tax reform is extraordinarily difficult, right? In part because there are so many moving parts. We saw a similar complexity with healthcare, right? And one of the things that people would say that you're reorganizing, somewhere between a sixth and a fifth of the national economy. And as a consequence of that, there are a lot of interests pulling in a variety of different directions. Tax policy is arguably harder because of the ways in which you're impacting basically every part of the national economy. And this makes it interest intensive, both in terms of pressure groups, but also in terms of the ways in which it's going to pull even the same membership of a party like the Republican Party. So in some ways, to try to minimize the divisive nature of tax overhaul, they're trying speed, right? They tried this with healthcare, didn't work, but they're trying it again. They're trying to push through a bill without any Democratic support as well, which of course means that they need every last Republican vote, particularly here in the Senate. But the prospects of doing that are extraordinarily difficult. And they think that if they really push this through and don't allow some of the issues to sit, for people to unpack them, for them to be committee hearings and the like, that they'll be able to really push this through. So to a certain extent, it's a fairly reckless approach to creating policy, but it's one that they think they have to do. Making it worse, I mentioned that they're trying to do this without any Democratic support, meaning that in the Senate, they're working around the filibuster. So by rule, their tax reform can't have any impact on the budget over the next decade. That means that they're trying to create these really significant tax cuts, but they're going to have to offset that with additional revenue. Right. So they have to do all of these things. And that's where you get into these controversial areas like 401ks and whether, in fact, those should be tax deferred or areas like the SALT deductions, the state and local tax deductions, whether, in fact, those should be included or not. Those are all part about increasing the revenue so you can offset it through taxes.
And that's between the rock and a hard place, right? In other words, you can't have both. So that's their problem.
It's exactly right. And the amount of money that they're talking about, right? They want to reduce. The Senate version was a reduction in the overall taxes by, I think, $1.5 trillion. And so you have to go after big things. So that's particularly the state and local tax deduction is a focal point, because there have been estimates that over a decade that would get you about $1.3 trillion.
On the other hand, Brad Hayes, let me just say they're already giving up on that one. we're hearing from the House that will not be included. At least the state taxes may, but the local taxes, if somebody pays $25,000 in taxes on a house, that's a good chunk of change to be able to delete from your income tax bottom line.
That's exactly right. And one of the fascinating things, right, the vote on the budget resolution in the House was 216 to 212, right? So it just barely passed. And there was significant Republican opposition from blue states, from states with higher taxation, because they know that it's going to raise the elimination of the SALT deduction would raise taxes for middle class families significantly. So you're already seeing the division. So there was the response to that by Kevin Brady, who's the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. So that, okay, we'll restore that. Well, of course, on the right, they're saying, what do you mean you cannot restore that? And so in order to kind of shore up some support in blue states, you're going to lose it in deeply red states. So this,
because I think they so desperately, Brad, want a victory. They don't really care all that much what the nature of that victory is. And by the way, I want to take a little umbrage with something you just said, for whatever it's worth. And that is, I have always believed that as the leadership has strong control over their people, that you're either in the tank, do what I tell you because you can't lose no matter what happens, or you're off the hook because you're in a dangerous spot. So, for example, a guy like John Faso in the 19th District, he's in a dangerous spot. It's going to be a very close election. Everybody knows it. So they let him off the hook. So, of course, you say, well, it was a very close vote. It was close enough, but whether it's 2 votes or 10 votes, they know how to do that so that they let the necessary people off the hook.
But this was a resolution. We're not even talking about the actual tax plan, right? I mean, they're going to work out the details. And so this was, I mean, they were opposing something that is almost symbolic. It's a working plan moving forward. And so, I think that the fact that you had the likes of Faso and Stefanik voting the way that they did, in the same way that Democrats like Tonko and Maloney voted, is really quite telling. And it's going to be a very difficult needle to thread. Now, that being said, I think what you're pointing out is a really important thing in thinking about what is the desperation metric here. Right. How much are Republicans feeling the need for a win? Because we were saying the same thing about health care reform. And yet the House Freedom Caucus would not budge on some key provisions that were trying to draw down spending.
And yet we're not hearing any real resistance to this plan from the House Freedom Caucus.
I don't think we've gotten there yet. In other words, that, again, when we start getting really down into the specifics, into the details. Now, of course, this is the nice part about the speed plan that they've implemented here, trying to do this like within the course of 3 weeks. Maybe there isn't enough time for it to unpack all of the problems with this. But nevertheless, for deficit hawks, there may be some real problems here if, in fact, you reduce the size of the SALT deduction rather than eliminate it altogether to make up that $1.3
trillion. Interesting.
And then there's the fact that there is a parliamentary rule here. And if they don't do that work, if they actually don't get it to be neutral over a decade, they can take it out of that process, and that opens it up for a filibuster. So there actually is you can only manipulate this so far. There is a lot of manipulation that you can do, but you can only do it so far without running into this problem about keeping it in the reconciliation process.
Really? And who's going to blow the whistle on them, the Republican parliamentarian?
The parliamentarian blew the whistle on a previous plan that was going through on health care, and it significantly disrupted what they were able to do. So there is a precedent there for the parliamentarian to actually enforce the rules in a way that disrupts partisan plans. So I think there's a little bit of meat there. I don't want to oversell that, but I think that they really do have to make the numbers work to a certain extent. And so some of these big things like the SALT deduction are going to be very difficult.
It's always great to talk to Brad Hayes, who, when he says SALT, means a state and local tax deduction or whatever, taxation. Thank you, Brad Hayes, who's Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. It's a great pleasure to have you here, and it's always wonderful.
Thanks, Alan.